This is a PlanetPhilip.com podcast.
Hello and welcome to the final Tree podcast. Joining me today is Don, aka Unc. Hi, Don.
Hi, Philip. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. Can you believe that we're actually at the end of the podcast series?
I know, it only took, how long did we take playing through all the games? Oh, it's like a year and a half, a year and a couple months at least.
But yeah, from making all of the things, but actual playing games is over 41 hours, but that's another topic. Okay, so let's talk about the tree. What was the tree event? Well, the tree event was an event that I decided to run starting summer of 2012, because I'd run an event the previous year and it was fairly successful, and I decided that I wanted to run an event every year, and I couldn't think what I should do at this point. So I decided to replay the games, and the name comes from the replay experience experiment, and its objective was to encourage people to replay the games and view them from a completely new perspective. Now, you are one of the people who have completed the whole series. Some started but didn't finish. But your experiences are very interesting for me because you've played the game so many times.
Yeah, especially in the Gold Source games. And some of that just comes from them having been around longer, you know, than the Source games. Mm. Although even the newest one, Episode 2, is still 6 years old at this point. But it's also from the technical standpoint. When I got into mapping, it was less than a year after Half-Life was released, and the both the single player and the multiplayer modding world was exploding. You know, They Hunger had just come out on a PC Gamer disc, you know, in the mail, and Valve added the custom game option to the main menu in the original Half-Life, which wasn't there, you know, if you installed it from the first CD when you bought it.
Okay.
So they added that when Team Fortress Classic came out. It would have been April of 99, so maybe, say, 6 months after Half-Life came out. Mm-hmm. They added that. You know, Counter-Strike was to follow a couple months later in various beta versions until Valve sort of bought it and took it over and hired the guys that made it. And then it became sort of an official product. Same with Day of Defeat later on. So the modding world was kind of exploding, and then I jumped in at the same time, just mostly focusing on single-player maps and you know, for the most part, small ones at that. But so a lot of my playthroughs were to kind of under, you know, not only observe and be inspired by, you know, the grandness of Black Mesa and that type of thing, but to find out what was behind the curtains. You know, how did Valve and Gearbox do all these interesting tricks, some which the players don't even notice because it looks, you know, it's kind of almost like approaching it like special effects in movies, especially before they were all computer generated. Is how do you trick the viewer into making it look real and not even knowing that you did something special here. You know, this is how whatever is supposed to look, an explosion or a spaceship is supposed to look. And so researching and understanding step by step what all these mappers and coders did to pull off the tricks that they did, you know, led to playing the games through quite a few times, at least up till, you know, at least Half-Life and Opposing Force.
But I mean, you weren't just looking from a mapper's perspective, were you? I mean, you played them because you enjoyed playing them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if I didn't enjoy playing them, I wouldn't have mapped for them and replayed them so many times. But there are examples where I would just load a specific map and, you know, turn on God mode and no target mode, which makes you, though the enemy's not even looking your direction, just watch and figure out and, you know, test and kind of replicate something. And then I would put my own spin on it, for example.
Okay. So how do you feel the event went? Do you feel that this particular playthrough, as in the set of playthroughs, gave you an opportunity to look at things from a different perspective with regard to the fact that we were discussing things and people were raising questions and points? And do you think the event was a success from that regard?
Yeah, absolutely. I was surprised to see, especially in, as I said, the Gold Source games, which I've played more than Half-Life 2 and its follow-on episodes, how much I didn't know about the game. For example, there were parts that I had never seen or been to. And really? You would think somebody who's played the games, you know, Half-Life specifically, more than, say, 15 times, probably. Maybe not all the way from start to finish, but at least up till Zen. You know, hadn't seen little hidden corners with, you know, health and ammo in them and things like that. And I, that took me a little off guard. And that piqued my interest enough to certainly stay with the rest of the game playthroughs. And the other thing that was nice about it, from my perspective, is actually playing everything in order. Often I would play, you know, I would play Half-Life 2, but I wouldn't play the episodes. I would play maybe, you know, Opposing Force, but I wouldn't play Blue Shift or Half-Life at the time. So kind of playing them in the order that they were released, even though, let's say, the first three games, the Gold Source ones, overlap chronologically. And that's kind of the interesting spin on it, is that they sort of all take place at the exact same time.
Yeah.
Plus or minus a few hours, let's say, at Black Mesa. It was interesting to play in order, which I don't normally do. So,
okay.
What about you? I think did you have any different perspectives from this? This was really only your second playthrough for a lot.
Yeah, this was really only my second playthrough. From an event point of view, I think the mistake I made was letting it last for so long. And it wasn't really a conscious decision. But at first, when I discussed it with a few people, they said, don't do a chapter every day. A chapter every day will be too much. And in retrospect, I think that they were wrong. And I think that I should have either done a chapter a day or a chapter every other day, because I kind of lost the momentum both in the event and within the game, because sometimes there would be 3 or 4 days when I wouldn't have played between each chapter. And I don't think that the chapters work out as well. I actually think I'd be sitting here now feeling better than I do. Not that I'm feeling bad about the games, but I think that I'd have been even more enthusiastic about them if I'd have played them, you know, every other day, one chapter. But, you know, 2020 vision is great. So if I ever do anything like this again, in fact, if they eventually finish Black Mesa and then the other two remakes are made and I do an event for those, that's how I'm going to do it, a chapter a day. Even if I have to prepare like a month before I start it, I'm going to do it that way.
The other two remakes. Oh, you mean the Opposing Force? Yeah, I couldn't remember the name. Blue Shift on the Source.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're one of them got, or they, I think they joined forces, right? And then
they did, they got, but they're still keeping too,
recently.
Perhaps, but I mean, in the sense that when they actually,
yeah,
you know,
no,
get
don't hold your breath, right? So.
Yeah, because I mean, we're still waiting for the Zen part of Black Mesa, and I haven't even finished the tram ride of Black Mesa. I decided not to do that. I wanted to play it in one go.
Oh, fair enough. Okay.
All right. So our next section then is what we're going to call the one game from six, which is essentially we get to choose maybe 5 or 6 chapters that, if we kind of put it into a high-intensity, high-caffeine explosion of a game, which chapters would those be? Would you like to start, or shall I?
Go ahead.
All right, okay. Now, I'm going to do them in the games that they were released in, but I'm not necessarily suggesting that if you did put them into one game in this particular order, it would be the greatest game ever. But from Half-Life 1, I think Surface Tension. And I know a lot of other people like Surface Tension. You're a fan of Surface Tension?
Absolutely,
yeah. I mean, it combines so many different aspects. So that would have been my first choice. And then for Opposing Force, Foxtrot Uniform.
Mm.
Now, I remember Foxtrot Uniform much better than I do Surface Tension, because that was the one where I died a lot of times, and it was very intricate, and you start in a small space and you finish in a small space, but you feel as though you've gone a really long way. And you get a lot of chance with shock troopers, because I really quite like shock troopers.
Yeah, me too.
So that was that. From Blue Shift, I think it's Power Struggle. Power Struggle was where the one you have to go up and down and you have to get the power working.
And you have to kind of recharge that little battery that you slide.
You have to
around,
recharge,
right?
The battery, yeah. Which is kind of fun as well. And there's a couple of puzzles in there, and there's some action. And,
The one thing I really do like about that chapter is that it has an overarching puzzle too. So, you know, your kind of overall goal is to recharge the battery and get it back on the elevator to go upstairs. But to accomplish that, there's a number of tasks there. And one of the chapters I picked is just like that.
So. Okay. And then on to Half-Life 2, and that's Highway 17. Mm. And one of the things that I did notice is that I am actually less impressed with Half-Life 2 this time round than I was the first time. But that's the only real big iconic chapter or feeling I'm left with from Half-Life 2. Yeah, sure, the gravity gun and driving along the coast and all of those things. But from a gameplay and visual perspective, I think that that one was the biggest for me. And then episode one was Exit 17, which is the final chapter and is possibly my favorite chapter from all of the games.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I really, really liked that one. And then from episode two, it's Freeman Pontifex, which includes that wonderful section where you have to go down and then over the radioactive area. And you have the bridge puzzle, which is pretty iconic.
Another kind of overarching goal for that level.
Exactly.
But yeah, that's the one where you kind of look down and you can basically, you can't see details, but you can see the entire level that you have to make your way through to get up to the car on the bridge.
And that might be technically superb. Mm. And from a player's perspective, it's pretty, pretty cool as well.
Yeah.
So those were my six. Whether they would actually make a great game altogether, of course not. You can't just take the best bits and stick them together because they're the best bits because they work towards something and they're part of something else. But those were my favorite particular chapters.
Good. Fair enough. Yeah,
and yours?
The way I approached it wasn't just to pick my favorite chapters, but to pick five chapters from the various games that might fit together. Yeah, I'm going to jump between Gold Source and Source Engine, but if you can sort of account for that and the location, the gameplay sort of, I tried to ramp it up from not really starter, but kind of, less challenging to more challenging to have a combat highlight at the end.
Okay.
So I picked five to kind of match that with high quality sections in between. So I would
perfect.
Actually start off with the Lost Coast map.
Okay.
And by itself, it's an okay experience. It's actually not bad for it's superb for a one map, sort of add-on, free add-on or tech demo that Valve really intended it for. But I love the idea of climbing something that you can see in the distance. And a number of mods and maps have made use of this as well. But seeing the sort of the monastery area up on the hill, up on the cliff, and figuring out that you have to make your way up there and then actually making your way up there. And then, of course, the battle that ensues with the Combine and I think there's a gunship or helicopter at the end, right?
Yep.
That seemed to be a nice starting point and then progression. And the next chapter I would pick, even though it's in Black Mesa, it's more the gameplay that I would be focusing on, was Blast Pit. And I like that because, again, it has an overarching puzzle to the chapter. You have to get the tentacle out of the rocket chamber so you can progress through the rest of the Black Mesa.
That is a wonderful level, you're right.
But it has all these side quests. You have to turn the power on, you have to get the fuel and oxygen going and all that. And just the grandness of Black Mesa is really shown off for the first time in that chapter. After that would be Water Hazard from Half-Life 2. That's the airboat one. And mainly, I like the vehicle part of it, but I really like the looks of those maps and how the sun is setting more and more as you progress your way toward Black Mesa East and ultimately Ravenholm after that.
Yeah, it's a well-timed level. It was just getting to the point where I was thinking, okay, I hope it ends soon because it was maybe getting too long. And they did a great job of just keeping it interesting long enough. They strung it out perfectly.
Yeah, and then partway through they add the gun to your airboat, which is really just like the Gauss gun, the Tau cannon from Half-Life.
Yeah,
So that was a nice sort of nostalgic nod there. After that, we progress, of course, to Surface Tension as the fourth chapter. Yeah, maybe we shouldn't overlap in our choices, but I'd have to pick Surface Tension because it was nicely, but pretty subtly built up in Half-Life, I think, because everybody's talking about, you have to get to the surface. You have to you had a peek at it maybe in a couple of the earlier chapters, but surface tension is really where you're finally outside. And not only are you outside, it's a bright sunny day, but you get these great. The first few maps are spectacular to go through. You come across the dam in the very first map, and that's a memorable set piece. And then later on, there's the cliff and all that. So, that's probably my favorite chapter throughout all the games.
Okay.
And then to wrap up, I would pick Our Mutual Fiend from Episode 2.
Okay.
And that was not the final chapter, but the real climactic chapter where you're in White Forest, finally. And not only do you have to defend a couple of the silos from the Combine attack, but then the Striders attack, and you're driving around in the buggy and using the Magnuson device on the Striders. So I thought that was a nice, semi-boss battle, but certainly a challenging level to wrap up our mini games here.
You put me to shame, because your selections were so much better thought out than mine, and they do make a good game, and I didn't put enough thought into it, but I agree with you. Yeah, Our Mutual Fiend is a superb end of game section. It's got to be the best end of game, how can I put it, experience. I mean, I much preferred Exit 17 as a gameplay, from a gameplay perspective, but it's just not big enough. It's just not spectacular enough to end a game. And Our Mutual Fiend does that. I agree with you completely.
Well, I really liked Exit 17 because of the confined area. So it's, at the very end, you're in the sort of the battle with the Strider, but you're kind of trapped in that U-shaped, train station, not really train station, but I guess it is a train station, right? Or cargo dock or something like that. So I thought it was a brilliant use of space and a nice,
it was
tense, battle, because there's only cover, every so often. So episodes 2's finale was much bigger but you can't really get lost in driving around in the defending against the Striders, but you could get turned around and take the wrong direction. So it was a much bigger, expansive finale, but I felt the battle was much more intense. It may be nice compliments to each other. One, you have sort of almost like an intimate, one-on-one battle with the Strider, and you're kind of trapped there. And the other one, you kind of you're open to take your own approach. There's a number of places you can get health and ammo and a new Magnuson device, but you're up against some of the toughest enemies in the game, the Striders, and especially when multiple hunters start to accompany the Striders.
Yeah. No, I agree. Excellent choice. So what about the worst few? I'm going to shock a few people now, I think. My worst was, not in any particular order, was the end of Half-Life 2. I thought that was so disappointing. And I understand, all the arguments, but the combat just wasn't particularly interesting. And I found the story, how it kind of ended was just, it wasn't a cliffhanger, but it wasn't not a cliffhanger. I was really unhappy with that.
Yeah, so you mean the whole, super gravity gun combat wasn't as fun?
The combat itself was just too easy, because I got there this second time around, and I figured out what I needed to do within moments, which is no reflection on my intelligence, because it's quite an easy thing to figure out. And I didn't die, and it didn't take long to do. And I'm kind of thinking, for a level to be, a wow level, I've got to die. If I don't die, it's not hard enough. It's not interesting enough. And don't ask me how many times I died on Our Mutual Fiend. And that was on easy level. So right. Goodness knows what it's like for you guys.
That's what quick save is for, though.
Yeah, okay.
To add on to that, I would think, and that's why I almost kind of agree. I mean, it's an interesting choice that Valve made. They intentionally made it totally different and almost, it almost parallels Half-Life a little bit in that, when you leave Black Mesa and go to Zen, it almost becomes a different game. It's certainly a different chapter, and the gameplay changes. Mm. And that's almost what happens when you enter the Sigil. They wanted, of course, for it to feel alien and not human, and they do a good job of that. But they also go as far as to change your weapon, change the amount of armor, health that you have, or HEV charge, let's say.
Yeah,
and they change the gameplay completely. So,
yeah.
If I were to look at it again, as we did in this event, of course, I would say the combat highlight of Half-Life 2 is really fighting your way through City 17 in the previous two chapters in Follow Freeman and Anti-Citizen 1. That's where you're up against the hardest, you know, the Striders and the elite Combine troops and things like that.
But somebody
haven't changed the gameplay there yet. So.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Somebody made a comment in the comments about how people should get over this idea that, you know, the end of the game needs to have a climax. But I do disagree with that quite strongly, because that's how things happen. The best part of the emotion, whether we're talking about sex or sport or games, is that last part, getting that final thing finished. And if it climaxes or highlights too early, then it just tails off. And if the tail off is too long, I kind of feel as though I've lost any of that excitement. And when the game finishes, I'm not excited. I'm not, my heart's not pumping. And it should, in my humble opinion.
Yeah,
anyway.
I see that. Although there's some, schools of thought and even in things like plays and musicals and drama, that the last chapter is really resolution chapter. So you're, in say a typical five act, play or something like that, your climax might actually be in the end of the fourth act, and fifth act is typically shorter. It's the resolution where you do wrap up any loose ends, but it's not. It gives you a little bit of time to reflect, and it gives you time to kind of maybe get your heart rate back down. There's maybe the relative length of things, you know, could be manipulated here, but. As a whole, I think Half-Life 2 and Half-Life and all these other games still stand up. We could change things about them, but I think the decision Valve made with the Citadel was interesting, and I think it works pretty well in that it really does start to make you feel like you're the one free man, you know, you were chosen and now you're almost invincible. And there wasn't so much of a boss battle at the end of Half-Life 2 as there were with the Striders, which was maybe 80% of the way through Half-Life 2. So,
yeah. I mean, the fact that Episode 1 and Episode 2 finish with something much more difficult and satisfying, I think probably is a reflection that whilst Valve should be applauded for trying something new, the ending of Half-Life 2 probably didn't receive as much awards satisfaction, exactly, as it should have done, you know?
Yeah, and I think they really got it right in Episode 2 when you have the big finale that we just talked about in Our Mutual Fiend. And then after that, you have T-1 where they spent, you know, sort of congratulating the player and then developing the story a little bit, but then bringing a really, really tense moment in and, of course, leaving us with the cliffhanger for the last 6 years.
Exactly.
So I thought that, and that relative length, that was only maybe 8 minutes long, so that relative length is a really nice payoff for making your way through the game and the episodes and then completing, of course, that last battle with all the Striders.
Yep. Absolutely. So my next area was the caves in Episode 2. I really didn't like those caves. I'm not really a big fan of dark places. I mean, I considered talking about Ravenholm, but I felt Ravenholm was much more imaginative and interesting from a player's perspective. But the caves in Episode 2, I didn't enjoy those at all. Just going to jump on from those.
Yeah.
And for my final two were the boss battles in Half-Life 1 and Opposing Force.
Yeah, I can't argue with those.
Worm's Nest was a complete bore fest, a snooze fest, whatever you want to call it. It was so repetitive.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure how you pronounce it, but the Nihilanth or the Nihilanth, mm-hmm, or however it's pronounced, I hated that level. I really did, and I don't know how I finished it. I must have been really lucky to finish it.
They were old school, you know, final boss battles, and they were typical at the time in the 90s as first person shooters were developing, and I've come not to like boss battles much at all. I like challenges, but boss battles where you're typically doing something completely different, especially the end of Opposing Force, where you have to shoot that stupid worm in the eye, you know, before you snipe the little shining ball in his stomach.
Shiny ball,
What is that? Come on, you could have done a better sequence here. I thought. And I think just, you know, in general, maybe more intense versions of normal combat that you've been training for the entire game make much more sense than a boss battle where you have to do something special to beat him.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not so much a criticism of Gearbox or Valve, because as you say, it was representative of what people were doing at the time. Yeah. And I remember playing Return to Castle Wolfenstein, and the boss at the end there is particularly repetitive. And you're right, it's just the reflections of the times. But, you know, 15 years on,
yeah,
it's not much fun.
Right.
And if I play those games again, I'm going to be dreading those games.
Well, I think, you know, Valve certainly evolved, and Gearbox did too. If you look at Decay, if you happen to get the chance to ever play Decay, Half-Life Decay, that is, which we tried a few months ago and had severe difficulty on the PC, but... you know, maybe it's worth looking at even a YouTube video of a Let's Play of the last chapter. But there, that boss battle is a nice co-op battle, and you're trying to shoot down an alien ship that keeps, you know, kind of trying to destroy the focus emitter, I think it's called, outside in this sort of canyon arena. Mm-hmm. That's much more enjoyable than any of the so-called boss battles from the other Gold Source games.
Okay.
And then, of course, Half-Life, you know, if you look at certainly... Episode 2, even Episode 1, Valve got the sort of the highlight or the boss battles right, and they evolved it, you know, over the years to really make it, you know, Episode 1, you're facing off against a Strider in a confined area, which we haven't had to do yet. And then Episode 2, you're still fighting against Striders, but they're accompanied by Hunters, which are new. And then, of course, you have the Strider Buster, the Magnuson device to kind of add it. Different gameplay element, but not totally change how you approach things.
No.
You're still ultimately shooting something with the gravity gun and then shooting shooting what you put on the
shooting
strider
what you've shot
with a pistol or something like that. So
yeah. All right. So let's hear yours. No doubt Residue Processing is in there.
Yeah,
that's
a little bit down the list. If I had to pick one of the most hated or ones that I kind of dread coming up to, it's probably Low Life from episode one. And that I found just to be it was almost cheap how dark they made episode one and the Low Life, I mean, in episode one. And that's when you're in the parking garage. The thing is, there's some nice gameplay in Low Life. I really like the parking garage with the three levels and the three antlion holes that are kind of...
Put the cars over the holes, yeah? I mean,
right,
that was a nice
and your challenge in that one arena is to kind of find the cars because there's a couple levels there and the one's behind a gate that you have to open and that type of thing. So, I actually quite like some of the gameplay, but I thought it was cheap how dark they made it. And they only made this change in episode two, but they actually, in episode two, if you notice, they uncoupled... the flashlight power from your sprint reserve, your sprint capability.
Okay.
So in Half-Life 2 and Episode 1, they're tied together. They come from the same power source. So if you're running with your flashlight on, you're depleting
even less
quicker
time.
So that made Low Life that much more frustrating. In that now, I suppose they intended that you would basically use your flashlight as a laser pointer and let Alex shoot a lot of these things, but at least on hard when I played, she still had trouble. And you let her take enough hits and she dies and then the game ends. So
I agree. The first part of that section or that chapter is not too bad, the car part. But that second part when you're waiting for the lift to come down, you're right. It's not fun.
Yeah. It's just so, so dark. But anyway. Yep. Ravenholm I would put on this list too. Although I don't
really
hate Ravenholm, but it always I don't know. I don't find it scary. Maybe it's just it creeps me out enough.
And okay.
It's a lot of it comes from maybe my first playthrough when, you know, you see the fast zombies kind of jumping across the buildings before you actually get attacked by one, and it's quite atmospheric even for being a nice sort of trap area with the spinning blades and dropping cars on zombies. You know, there's a certain amount of fun you can have there, but. I don't know. I feel like it's such a change in pace after Water Hazard that maybe it's that more than anything else.
And it's a big departure from the style of of other chapters and levels, yeah. isn't it? I mean, we don't think of the Half-Life series as a scary series, and it's not. And you're right, Ravenholm isn't particularly scary, but it was just such a departure. I have to say, though, that when I played it this time and I did the Zombie Chopper achievement, which is to play through the whole of Ravenholm using only the gravity gun, I actually enjoyed it much more. I felt that it added a new level because I had to be much more careful and thoughtful. Because many times you can just run through and shoot and jump and, okay, you can't avoid every enemy. But with the gravity gun, you've really got to be much more thoughtful. Yeah. So that was one of the few achievements that I actually enjoyed attempting.
I actually really like taking the ball that Dog is playing with in Black Mesa East, the little converted... Combine roller mine, you know.
Roller mine.
I enjoy taking that with me into Ravenholm because you can keep it with you all the way until you ride the little tram area over to Father Grigori in the graveyard. And it keeps returning to you, which is nice. You can't let it get blown up or it's gone. But it's nice in that you put it in a room and it'll start to roll over and kill head crabs if there's just head crabs, and it'll bother the zombies so they're not even looking at you. So it's a nice little twist and maybe a little nice little companion to have in Ravenholm. So my list is not too long. I would put Residue Processing on there, although I had a couple recent playthroughs of that for a mod that I'm currently making, and it's not as bad as I recall. It's actually quite short. It's only like four maps long, I think. So yeah, it of course is a change in gameplay because it's right after you get knocked out and you get your weapons taken away. So it's more puzzle based and avoiding. It's almost like platforming. Have to make some tricky jumps and you avoid pistons that are going to crush you and things like that. That's mostly why I didn't enjoy it. I thought adding a puzzle element or something like that rather than just making your way through these pistons just to get out might have been a little, you know, would have gone a long way toward improving that level in my mind.
Yeah, probably as we said about the boss levels, that was probably quite representative of the style of game design around that time.
Yeah.
You know, 1998, you know, that was the kind of things people were doing.
And to be fair, that's why Zen and the follow on, you know, the two chapters after that, Interloper and Gonark's Lair, got ragged on too by people, is that it changed the game quite a bit. Now it was intentional, but the style of gameplay was turned into quite a few jumping puzzles and things like that. It wasn't in really in tune with the rest of the game, but again, that's kind of by design because they want not only you to look like you're in an alien world, but they want you to feel it too.
And yeah, absolutely.
The gameplay there, like much like they did in the Citadel. So,
yep.
And that's probably it for my low moments. I thought On a Rail, maybe in Half-Life, dragged on a little too long, but
yeah,
I don't mind the level, the chapter in total. So
no, I'm not, you know, too unhappy with it. I know a lot of people do complain that it's just way too linear and similar and samey, but
it's all gray brown. I know that much. So.
Yeah. Okay, so the next section of the podcast here is like favorites, best and least kind of section. So we'll start with best looking area. Is there one particular area from the whole of the games that you think, you know, that area looks great?
Yeah, I would, if I had to pick one, it's probably the very last section of Water Hazard. When you're in the sort of arena with the chopper and he's throwing a bunch of mines at you. I really like the water and the lighting. You're kind of, as we discussed in the actual podcast for Half-Life 2, you're kind of in the golden hour, as photographers call it, before sundown, and there's sort of reds and yellows and oranges everywhere, and I thought that was just a gorgeous-looking area, even though there isn't really one standout set piece in that map. It's just the lighting is just gorgeous.
So. Yeah. I think for me, and, you know, I'm not sure the name here, but there's a section in Half-Life 1 where there's a lot of that green radioactive, and you're in. I mean, it might be where you have to kill the
the
earlier.
Tentacles.
The tentacles. Oh, there's kind of some of those area, the blast pit area, where you seem to be in this huge area. Very industrial, very concrete. It's got this green glow. I remember, you know, really being impressed with that particular particular
area. Yeah, I've been arguing with that. That's one of my favorite chapters.
Okay, next one on the list is best sequence. Now, we're thinking here more of like a set sequence.
Yeah, anything, actually. It could be a scripted sequence or just something that funny that happened to you in the game. I don't know. So for my part, I would actually probably choose one of two. We discussed it before, the opening sequence in Opposing Force, where you're flying in the Osprey. Banter among the soldiers there. But that's almost more for technical reasons, in that I love how they pulled it off behind the curtains. And, you know, the average player probably doesn't care or know, but from a mapper's perspective, it's impressive. But the other one, the one I really like, is actually the elevator sequence in Blue Shift. When you get on the elevator with a couple scientists, it's really early in the game. It's maybe the first 20 minutes or so.
Are you going up or down?
I think you're going down, and then eventually the elevator drops. You kind of stop at this level. It's supposed to be right when the resonance cascade is happening, you know, elsewhere in Black Mesa, which is why everything goes haywire. But some slaves start teleporting in, and some hound eyes are chasing a scientist, and then Barney gets almost run over by a train car and that type of thing. And I thought that whole sequence of events was a nice addition to the game to kind of kick things off after the resonance cascade.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I'm going to mention is just so minor by comparison that it just seems silly. But I remember the first time I saw one of the scientists dive out of the window.
I knew you would pick that one, actually. Did you? Yeah. You mentioned that before in mods, I think.
So clever. I just love that sort of sequence. You can just, I mean, it's got this like comedy element to it, but at the same time, you know, maybe you'd have to do that because there's no other way out. But it's probably the juxtaposition between the scientist who's straight-laced and very serious and quite old, and suddenly he's diving out this window, smashing the window. I love that part. Very funny. And that probably takes me to my funniest sequence as well, because not only is that, you know, quite a nice sequence, but it's funny as well. But the other one would be where you throw the grenade into the dumpster and it comes back out again. And we talked about this last week, which was like technically an accident, but that is incredibly funny.
It's like a happy accident, right? They found out it happened just by mistake, and then they added it to the game, which I thought...
I love that. What about you?
The funniest, I would probably just choose... You know, right after the resonance cascade in Half-Life, when you're first trying to make your way back up to the office levels, and an elevator flashes right in front of you carrying like two or three scientists, and they're just happy as can be going straight down to their death. It's, of course, dark humor, but the whole game is full of it. But I always chuckle at that. There's always the guy hanging off the ladder that falls down the shaft too, but that's it's a little later in the game. But
Okay. Scariest moment?
I would probably pick something that not many people would, and that I would pick the dark tunnels in Opposing Force. You remember the pitch black ones that are full of those the Voltigors, the big guys?
People might say
we talked about Lowlife and Ravenholm a little bit, but I don't find them scary so much because most of the enemies that you fight there are actually fairly, I'm not going to say harmless, but they're fairly, you know, they're fairly easy enemies. Maybe with the exception of the Zombines, because they can, once they pull out the grenade, then they become pretty deadly. But, even in Ravenholm, you know, you're facing headcrabs, poison headcrabs and zombies, but they're all fairly, you know, slow moving and they're not going to shoot you at the very least. So, they have to get up close to do their damage. The Voltigors in Opposing Force are some of the toughest and can be the most deadly because they're also roadblocks. You're trying to find your way through this pitch black tunnel with just...
And you can't run around them.
No, unless you get a couple feet gap, then you might be able to squeeze by them. But they're roadblocks. They kind of stop you in your tracks. So and you can't see them using that night vision. It's not a flashlight in Opposing Force. It's that night vision until you're maybe 10 or 15 feet away. So you're right on top of them by the time you see them. So, I always dread going into there and, try to make my way through as fast as possible.
Yeah, no, I like that one. It's a good choice. I was gonna choose the elevator section from Lowlife because that pitch black, the first time it happened to me, it really was like a jump in the seat moment. But you're right, in the more sensible sense, that area that you mentioned is scarier because it's a slow scary. It comes on slowly, and it's much longer as well. I think that you have to play for quite a long time in there compared to waiting for the lift in low life.
Well, I don't know. That seemed like a really, really slow elevator when I played it. So
yeah, maybe in hard it is, but in easy it comes a bit quicker perhaps. All right, what about your favorite enemy? Mine has to be the Shock Roach. I love those guys.
Oh, okay. The Shock Troopers, you mean?
Yeah, Shock Troopers. Yeah, I love the way they walk, the way they move, the way they fire, this kind of sound they make.
Yeah, as much as I love head crabs, I would probably actually say the female assassins from Half-Life and Opposing Force. I find them to be some of the most challenging adversaries because they're fast and on when you play on hard they have personal cloaking devices, so when they're not running or shooting they're mostly invisible. It's like kind of like a predator effect a little bit. If you've ever seen that movie, so they kind of fade into the background, which so it makes them pretty tough to fight against.
Yeah, I do agree. They are difficult, but I don't enjoy fighting them. If I had like an area with Shock Troopers or ninjas or female assassins, whatever you want to call them, I'd pick the Shock Troopers.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, the least favorite?
Oh, this is an easy pick for me. Baby head crabs.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god, I hate those guys. They only show up, thankfully, I think on in Gonark's lair. That's the only think the only chapter that they show up. And oh my god, because you can't see them.
Yeah.
Yeah, just frustrating.
And there can be a lot of them as well.
Oh, yeah.
There can be five or six around, and you're trying to, crowbar one, and there's one behind you. And
they're not so much deadly because they only take away, like, a point of armor or health, but they kind of restrict you from moving. So if you crouch down to try to crowbar a couple, there's two or three surrounding you. It's hard to get out of there if you have to. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What about you?
Striders.
Ah, okay.
No, sorry. No, hunters. I apologize. Hunters. I don't know why. I mean, they're such a well-designed enemy, but I'm just not very good against them. And no matter how many times I try picking up, barrels and letting them shoot their fletchets and I fire them back, or I'm just not very good at fighting them. So consequently, I'm falling off my chair trying to avoid them as they come at me.
They are tough enemies. And of course, I'll set them up to be hated by the player because they show you that sequence of one almost killing Alex right in front of you. So
yeah,
can't argue with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Favorite weapon?
I'd probably have to go with the Opposing Force spore launcher. That little green alien guy that you can carry. And oh, that thing is like a grenade launcher with 20 grenades in it. And it's, I think it's overpowered, but it's great fun to use. So.
And you stroke him. Well, I mean,
right.
You pet
him a little bit. Yeah. What about you?
I don't know. I think I might say the crossbow.
Yeah, that's a nice one.
I really enjoy using the crossbow, but of course it has these limitations that you can't fire very quickly, and up close against numerous enemies is not so much fun. But to be honest, what I think is much more important is the combination of enemy and weapon. I mean, for ant lions and ant lion workers or ant workers, the shotgun.
Oh, that's great when they...
No doubt about it. And then maybe for combined soldiers, the second firing option of the pulse rifle, the energy ball.
Right.
I mean, for me, it's much more about getting the right combination of those two than any particular one weapon that I'd want to use all the way through,
Yeah. I do one quick honorable mention here. I love the wrench in Opposing Force as well. And that's honestly great fun in Sven co-op too, if you ever play that. That's the one, that's a big red pipe wrench, but the secondary fire, you can wind it up and hold it over your head. And then if you let it swing, it'll usually jib whatever, you hit with it. So it's that's why I like it so much.
All right, cool. Now, the next one on our list is favorite music, but wow.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if you had a track, because I quite like the music for most of the games. So.
I do have all of the tracks on MP3, and I keep meaning to take them into the car or put them on my phone and listen to them when I'm driving, but I have never got around to it. But
I find them to be great mapping music. So when I'm working on my mods or maps, I'll put on the Half-Life music and Opposing Force music and let that inspire me. So.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'd struggle. I'd be curious to know whether listeners have got their own favorites. And while we're talking about them, I'd really like to hear from listeners to post, you know, the list, like we said, the scariest area, the funniest sequence, favorite enemy. Please post all of yours and we'll, you know, maybe even get a poll going or something. Next one on the list is most challenging chapter or area.
Yeah, is there one that stood out for you as really being taking, you know, 20 tries to get past?
Yeah, got to be our mutual fiend.
Yeah, that was on my list too. Maybe not the top, but that's on my list.
Yeah, for me it was. I don't know why. Probably because it was this combination of driving and running and shooting and dodging. It was like a bit of everything. And maybe I'm just too simplistic and I need to do one thing at one time. So I don't know.
Yeah,
you?
I got two on my list that kind of surprised me in how much challenge there were. Now, again, I played all the games on hard this time around to kind of amp up the challenge a little bit. But was Interloper in Half-Life. So that's really, when people talk about Zen, I think they're really talking about Interloper, which is about 5 or 6 maps long, the chapter. And it's, there's not a lot of cover in places. And on hard, at least, the slaves, the Vortigaunts, wind up and shoot you with their green lightning about twice as fast as they do on easy and medium. So you can get quickly taken down, and it does more damage. So you can quickly get taken down from, you know, a nice comfortable health level to a critical health level in a matter of seconds. And
now,
go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say, now I'm looking at the screenshots. I do remember dying a few times here.
Yeah, and there are some tricky jumps in there, to be honest. So, you know, combine those two, and yeah, it can be kind of a deadly level. But I liked it because it was, again, near the end of the game. It wasn't a boss battle, but it was a nice, you know, combat highlight, I thought, this playthrough. And the other one was Worlds Collide, which is the final chapter in Opposing Force. And I don't mean the boss battle per se, but it's part, Worlds Collide is actually a pretty long chapter. I think we had like, I don't know, half an hour or something in that. I'm trying to look it up now.
I got 44 minutes.
Right, I have 37. So it's actually quite a long chapter, but that's also where you're fighting a lot of the Black Ops in the warehouses. Making your way down to where the Gene Worm, the final boss is sitting. And I found that to be a nice combat highlight in Opposing Force. The Black Ops, both the female assassins and the male Black Ops that have grenades and grenade launchers and things like that were some of the most challenging enemies in all the games, but certainly in Opposing Force.
Yeah, true. Okay, so wow moments. This is I'm going to trademark that phrase, I think. For me, the wow moments are without doubt the tram ride at the beginning of Half-Life 1. Mm. That just somehow sealed my fate, you know, hobby-wise, basically for the next 14 years.
And if I might say so, I think a big part of that, maybe the music that they play in the background, going back to the favorite music. It's called, the track is called Vague Voices, but it's really known as the Half-Life tram music. So.
All right. Yeah, you're right. I mean, the sound there is eerie, but it gives you this impression of size, and you get to see, I mean, it's the ultimate, this is where we're going.
Exactly. We've talked a lot about kind of previewing things, teasing things, seeing where you're going, and Black Mesa Inbound sets the scene perfectly for the game.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic. That's a huge wow moment for me. For you?
I would say leaving the train station in Half-Life 2 into the city square where you first see the Citadel in City 17. And again, it's a nice, bright, sunny day in the otherwise very oppressive City 17. That first view of the Citadel and the post with the monitor showing Breen's face on it is forever etched in my memory. And that's one, that leaving there, whether or not, you know, I'm usually being chased by the Metro cop that I threw the soda can at, but, you know, leaving that and seeing that vista is memorable. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And what music is played there? Do you know?
That's a good question. I don't know the name of the track. I think there is something played as you reach outside, but I don't.
Can you can hear it in your mind at the moment?
Not at the moment. No, I'm actually not 100% sure there's music played there.
It might not be.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was that's pretty spectacular. And I think another wow moment is when you come out of the caves in episode two.
Oh, of course. I can't remember. Yeah. And you see the guys on the bridge, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty. That is pretty cool.
Yeah. And I would say the other wow moment for me isn't really something to look at per se, but it's when the G-Man returns in episode two. Since we haven't seen him since the beginning of episode one, the very beginning of episode one. And then he interrupts the sequence where the Vortigaunts are healing Alex with a good, you know, 2 minute speech talking directly to you. And then, you know, kind of almost threatening Alex, interestingly enough. So that was a very memorable section. Not only because we haven't seen him in a while, but it does a lot to advance the plot and add more intrigue to his own character.
Yes, yes. And some of the sections in Half-Life 2, I can't remember where, near the end, within the Citadel, you get to see a lot of things, and that's like, wow, this place is huge.
Yeah. I really like, you know, in terms of scale, you know, we talked about the scale of Blast Pit in Black Mesa, that's kind of a wow moment, but also the climbing over the underside of the bridge in Half-Life 2 in Highway 17, which I think is probably one of the reasons you picked Highway 17 as one of your favorite chapters.
You're right. Yeah. I mean,
now that music I can picture when it's very peaceful. You're climbing under, you know, over the broken railings underneath. That music I can picture perfectly. I don't know the name of it, but
wow,
yeah.
that shows you how many times you've played it, huh?
Well, I seen whether it's movies or games, moody music always seems to stick with me, and I really like the subtle touches that it can add. You know, yes, there are some sort of pulse pounding music there when you're fighting, you know, Combine or you're fighting the soldiers in Half-Life, but to me, it's really the atmospheric, more subtle music that that I latch onto.
Yeah, me too. Not just the pumping stuff, but just that thing in the background that is almost not music in many ways.
Right.
It's more soundscape than it is music, but obviously there's a musical element to it as well. True. Okay, so if we were coming to the final words, I mean, we've played a huge amount of games. In my case, it's over 41 hours. And distilling that experience down into a few words is obviously impossible, but one of the things that struck me is how creative Valve is and how they are constantly trying new things, and they won't release a game unless it contains something new or it pushes the stories. They've resisted the urge to suck the life out of the franchise and just make too many games and too many, I don't know, toys and other elements. They've contained themselves. They've controlled themselves very well.
And a movie especially. I'm glad they've not allowed that to be made. Meanwhile, there are a decent number of small fan movies being made or have been made on, you know, let's say YouTube or Vimeo, inspired by Half-Life or Half-Life 2. And some of them are pretty high quality.
They are.
You know, so
they are.
But in the meantime, yeah, I'm glad Valve has not sold out, so to speak, and had, you know,
that's the phrase.
Yeah, somebody just make a explosive summer movie out of Half-Life, because it wouldn't do the game justice, I think.
No, and I will be sorely disappointed if they release a game and there is a movie, and there is Gordon in it or any of the characters. If they release a movie called Black Mesa and we don't see any of the characters that we've become accustomed to in the games, I would be interested. I would be curious. I would be happy. But I really hope they don't. And honestly, I might not even watch it, because I wouldn't want that to taint my experience of the games.
Mm.
I know it's an extreme, but I am extreme in those kind of cases. So that was that. Another thing that interested me was that, having played these things again, I actually think that I've preferred episode one to Half-Life 2. Half-Life 2 was bigger and it was longer and it was, you know, so different from the source games. But I felt that they had learnt so much since Half-Life 2 that actually Episode 1 is a better game. It's shorter and it's got some things that I don't like about it, but if I had to play them again, I'd rather play episode one.
Yeah, and we talked about that a lot in the podcast, how Valve really, and for episode one, didn't add that much new content. You know, really the Zombine was the highlight, perhaps enemy-wise. No new weapons, I think. But they took what they had in Half-Life 2 and really polished it up and combined things in interesting ways. And, you know, Alex sniped for you in one section, and then you're fighting a Strider in a really contained area, which felt totally different than the Striders in Half-Life 2. You're right. They were very clever, and you could see the progression of the games, too. You compare Half-Life 1 to Episode 2 and how different they are in terms of polish. They're still both very enjoyable, but you can, you know, break things in Half-Life and get out of the maps and things like that. And, you know, a certain part of me really likes that sort of unpolished, you know, raw around the edges experience, and some of it's just nostalgia, but I think a mixture of the two really, you know, still keeps my interest high in these games.
Yep. Another thing that I realized is the order of playing the games. I would definitely recommend people play Blue Shift before they play Opposing Force.
You made a post or something about
that. I made a post about that. Yeah. I mean, that was really quite an important aspect for me because, you know, after my disastrous interview with the guys at Gearbox, and disastrous in the sense that we lost, you know, at least half of it, it sort of came across to me how strongly they felt about the quality of the work in Blue Shift. And I'd always had this impression that it was like the, you know, the black sheep of the family, but it's not. It's actually the same quality as the rest of the games. It's just that after you've played Half-Life 1 and then you've played Opposing Force, you've got new weapons, your expectations are so much higher that when you do play Blue Shift, you're disappointed. Not because it's not a good game, but because we've been led to believe that the next game will be even better. Make sense?
Yeah, you know, there's this thought, certainly in Hollywood, that sequels need to be bigger and better to be successful. But if you take Blue Shift for what it is, and that's really a mod for Half-Life with not much new content in terms of enemies or no new content in terms of enemies or weapons, it really excels.
If
you accept it for what it is. And because it's, and I would say it's even, you know, consistently across the board, it's a little higher quality than Half-Life or Opposing Force. And that's because there's no real dull moments. You know, it's there's no filler material too much. You know, maybe here and there in Blue Shift, but not nearly as much as On a Rail might drag on a little bit in Half-Life, for example. So I felt that maybe the average quality was a little higher. You don't quite get the wow moments that you did in the other games, but it's a nice solid add-on. And I felt the same way about Decay when I played that years ago. It's a nice solid add-on. There's some interesting co-op aspects added to Decay that you can't do in the other games, but overall it's, you know, it's pretty enjoyable. And if you take it for what it is, it's a very nice addition to the Half-Life you know, mythology
franchise. And the one other thing I'd like to mention is the fact that we're still discovering things about Half-Life 1. I mean, I've got my page called Resources and Curiosities. And not that long ago, there were some videos posted by Barnes, I think, which was talking about the code behind the Hound Eyes. You know, that they're in a squad and they have different colors for, you know, this sonic signal that they send out, and some other the videos. And we're still discovering things about them. And that's kind of, you know, amazing.
Yeah,
I mean, how old is this game? It's like 15 years.
We're just coming up on 15 years next month. So
we are, you know. And
full anniversary.
And we don't have that with Half-Life 2 Episode 1 and Episode 2.
No, and I mean, I'm sorry, real quick. I think some of that goes to what we were just talking about, is sort of
maybe the polish.
Yeah, the unpolished or rough edges around Half-Life and Opposing Force and to a lesser extent Blue Shift.
Yeah, but at the same time, it also goes to this idea that there was maybe a much deeper thought or planning into Half-Life 1 that they didn't put in, or they were just much more subtle because, you know, it's taken this long to realize them.
Or maybe it was cut from Half-Life 2, for example. I think there was a lot of
Could be.
Interesting content there that was cut, probably for good reason, but
Yeah, I'm sure.
Maybe just and left maybe in the, Half-Life 1 for, you know, because it was their first game. So
yeah, it could be. Could be. And maybe the beta release, you know, the theft of the beta really made them change the way they did things. I don't know. But for me, playing this series again has really brought that home. There is so much depth to Half-Life 1. That we're only, or that we're still discovering and appreciating.
Yeah, and on my part, one of the things I wanted to say was to certainly thank you for doing this event. It has directly inspired me to make a mod for Half-Life that announced just a week ago, Scram Half-Life.
Scram Half-Life,
that is a modification for the single-player game of Half-Life to not only add some difficulty to it, but to really reward the player for exploring and reaching places that you may not have seen before in Black Mesa and Zen and things like that. So,
and that was a direct result of playing the tree event?
Absolutely, because it's, you know, playing through it myself and then, of course, watching William's Let's Play videos of Half-Life, I saw some places that I had never seen before in, honestly, more than 15 playthroughs, as we discussed, you know. Maybe sometimes I tend to rush through sections and don't explore them fully, but there were a couple of places that I had never seen before, and it was usually worthwhile. There was a little, you know, bit of health or ammo or some little scene with an HEV suit there. You know, a couple of them I can think of. So that got me wondering how many places didn't I notice in Black Mesa and Half-Life, and that inspired me to make this mod, and hopefully it'll, if you want to replay Half-Life, it's a little different way to play, and certainly encourages exploration.
Yeah, I think I'll give that a go. I mean, I not that I need an excuse to replay the games now, because now I've taken that leap of second playthroughs, I'll be much more open to playing them again. So once you release the mod, I'll definitely give it a go. I don't know how successful I'll be, because I'm not a great player, and if it's ramping up the difficulty, then I might struggle a little bit.
There may be a way to, you know, keep it on easy level. I'm already, you know, sort of debating whether I should add that, and I probably will to the game to just allow flexibility. So.
All right, well, that's cool. Well, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you for making all of the podcasts, and without you, the podcast would have been nothing. In fact, probably without you, there would be no podcast. I wouldn't bother making a podcast on my own. So thank you for that and taking the time.
My pleasure.
I'd like to thank Sparks for updating the tree page with all of the times and everything. That's been a pain in the neck for him, and he's worked very hard for that. So I really appreciate that. I'd like to thank Stanley and William for creating the walkthrough. Stanley wrote all of the walkthroughs, and in some cases they are they have been written specifically for the tree event. So thank you for that. And William formatted the PDFs, which might not sound much work, but Stanley and I were constantly saying, no, we don't like this, and change this, and put this back. And so he spent a lot of time on that. William for making the video, so that's William over at Podcast 17. Those videos were really interesting, and I'm highly disappointed that he didn't continue with that. But that might be a function of, you know, such a long break between each one. Obviously, to thank all of the readers and the players who have participated in the event, because without them I might have lost interest. But, you know, everybody, you know, added comments, and there were some speedrun videos which were really interesting in themselves, which we haven't even talked about. Yeah. But so that was that. And of course, have to thank everybody at Valve and Gearbox, because without them, without their vision, without their drive and motivation and passion, we would not be sitting here now. We would not have played those games. And one of the things I wish I'd done is worked out how much I paid for all of the games, and worked out how many, you know, how many pounds per minute I've got, you know, just got a quick comparison. But for me, 41 hours of pure games, that's not the mods, that's just the games, is fantastic value.
Right, and then you add in all the mods and other, even multiplayer mods and things like that that have been built in, you know, using these assets and using these games as bases are, it just boggles the mind sometimes. I think Counter-Strike, you know, and Team Fortress Classic, which led directly to Team Fortress 2, and et cetera, et cetera. It's quite a world that Valve has built and Gearbox has added to over the years.
Yeah, and as much as we are all frustrated by the lack of news from Half-Life 3, not the fact that it's taken so long, just the lack of news, we're going to still love them no matter what. And if it takes another 5 years, we'll all come back to the game and the franchise when they release it. So yeah, thank you if you're listening, which is highly unlikely, but if you're listening, Valve and Gearbox, thank you so much for all of your hard work. We really appreciate it.
Seconded.
All right. So that's it. We're finished. Thanks, Don. Really appreciate your time and effort.
Yeah, thank you, Phil, for having me.
You're most welcome. So listeners or readers, however you want to think of yourselves, listen out for an announcement within the next month or so, or maybe two, concerning the next event. Probably that won't be until early 2014 or maybe late 2013. Who knows? And hopefully it'll be interesting for you and you'll participate. So thanks for listening and goodbye.
Bye.
Remember, finishing Half-Life is just the beginning.